It is Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here as usual, live in person in the studio on what has now become another beautiful Saturday morning. I like this transitional weather. It's going to be 80 in New York City today.
Really?
Yeah, in mid to upper 70s here.
Huh, interesting.
The difference will come in a couple of days when this thing that's moving west, east across the country hits them and leaves us alone, hopefully.
Yeah, tomorrow doesn't look as good. A little rain in the forecast and go well.
It's a delightful time of the year in Northeast Florida, and I suspect most of Florida. Anyway, I digress. It is the last program of March.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, it's been less than fun, and this week was certainly no exception to that. But first, before we get into all that, let's welcome back all the regulars. Thanks for always being there. The reason we keep doing this every Saturday and having all the fun that we have. And to anybody that's new out there, just happened to find us or got told about it or whatever it is, just try to stick around for the whole hour. We'll promise you that something will happen that you'll learn from. So we're here to talk about what we want to talk about. But we're more importantly here to talk about what you all want to talk about. So lines are open, 904-222-8255. And you can call us with any comment or question about pretty much anything. Be nice if it relates to money. But when you think about it, what question doesn't relate to money? You can swing it back in that direction pretty much anytime. So if you want to change the subject to what you want to talk about, just pick up the phone, give us a call. Meanwhile, life will go on despite Friday's stock market.
Yeah, it was ugly. And, it's one of these things where it's all politics. And politics drive the market short term, but not long term. It's frustrating because anytime Trump mentions tariffs, the market goes down. And you can watch it in real time.
I'm going to explain a lot about tariffs this morning that people don't know. So don't go anywhere, folks, till that comes up.
Yeah, it's the thing is, I think it's just the uncertainty around everything, that things change so fast. And one day, I think it was last week or early this week, he was saying, well, it won't be that bad. And then he slapped a 25% tariff on all imported automobiles for what. And we don't even know what that means. Is it domestic automakers that produce in Mexico and Canada? Is it just foreign automakers? But a lot of them have plants here. So it's just very confusing, and the market can't untangle it fast enough to dissect if it's good, bad, or indifferent.
Yeah, if you're building a car in a factory in this country, in the lower 48, the parts of that car will cross so many borders so many times.
Exactly.
So they have to come up with a definition of content being American in order to throw this on there. And you all know probably that they're doing this for the simplest of reasons, and that is to get rid of tariffs the other way. But as I said, after the break, I'll talk about that.
Yeah, so definitely. That'll be a good topic because that is something that people don't know about, I think, in large part. So looking forward to that. But yeah, it was pretty much, we can all say, good riddance to this quarter. It was not great. It was it started off actually pretty well. It seems crazy, but on February 19th, the S&P hit an all-time high. And then it's been pretty much bad news ever since. At that point, the S&P was actually up 5% for the year, and now it's down 5.1% for the year. The Dow is off just 2.3% this year. The NASDAQ, though, is off 10.3% this year. The peak of all three indexes happened at different times, which is, lately, it's been kind of unusual. Usually, they're moving in tandem, but they really haven't this year. It's been quite different. The S&P was the most recent peak. The NASDAQ peaked on December 28th. That was over 14% higher than it was today. And to find the peak on the Dow, you have to go all the way back to September 30th, when the Dow closed over 45,000 and was 7.6% higher than today. So it's been interesting the way they haven't really moved in tandem. A lot of that, I believe, has to do with the underperformance of the Mag 7, which I'll get to more in a little bit.
Yeah, I've never seen a time where there were so many days when there was a triple-digit spread between up and down, above zero and below zero, one green, one red, in other words, on the two major indices.
Happening more and more, it feels like. It is. I don't have any actual data
around
that.
We're either going to put our money in this one or this one, but we're certainly not going to do both.
Yep, very interesting. In general, since the election, defensive stocks have outperformed the U.S. market. Hedges like precious metals have been strong. Natural gas has absolutely surged. International markets have performed well. And fixed income has done decent. Bitcoin has also seen a bump since the election, but it's down over 20% since the inauguration. Yeah. But it's still up 20% from the election, which shows you how volatile that asset class is. This week actually started off decent with the market up, but it didn't last. As I mentioned, tariffs and then also some less than ideal economic data turned a good week around, and it got worse as the week went on. Consumer confidence fell to the lowest level since 2022, falling to 57 from 64.7 a month ago. It's now down 28% in the last year. Up until this month, that decline was led really by Democrats, and then some independents started to get on boards. But this month, some Republicans even got on board and lowered their expectations. So the stock market, I think, is really weighing on everyone. The spike in bearish sentiment towards the stock market has also gotten pretty extreme. It's at levels that are usually seen at the end of much larger drawdowns. So think late 2022 and early 2009. If you remember those times, they were both much larger. They were actually bear markets, and they were much deeper than the current correction we're in. Also, right when sentiment hit these levels, the market turned around and recovered, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. In fact, I don't think there has been a time when bearish sentiment has reached this level that the market didn't turn around shortly thereafter. Pretty interesting. From a seasonal perspective, mid-February through March is not a great time in the market. So that's the period we've been in. However, April tends to be one of the best months in the market. In the last 10 years, April has erased all of the losses in February and March. If you compare the average 10-year period to the average 10-year period in April, all of those losses have been erased. Now, we'll see if this year follows that same pattern. I don't know. It's possible.
Anything possible. We were reading through the pros and cons this morning. I'm sure Adam was reading the same thing mm-hmm. I was. There are so many things that are good out there, and there are so many things that are bad out there.
Yeah.
And I feel like we've been singing this song for two years.
I think I've said that every week for the last year.
At least 1 year, maybe longer. Yeah.
I want to talk about one or two of the bad things because they are concerning. They're not huge flashing red warning signs, but they are warning signs. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's dire, but it is concerning.
Yeah, there's reason for confusion. It's not just that we can't see everything. Maybe it's because we can see everything that we're so confused.
Mm-hmm.
And it will straighten itself out. And I'm sure Adam will be rattling off some statistics about that after the break, because I think you're going to like them. When we start out a year like this, it doesn't stay like this very often.
No.
Not that it can't.
It doesn't.
But it doesn't usually. So all that said, we're going to pay a few bills, take a little break, and we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do have lines open, 904-222-8255, where you can take a shot at a trivia question that I'm about to lay out. This is sponsored, as usual, by Paul Lloyd at First Coast Alarm. You can call Paul at 904-636-7888. What market milestone was reached on this very day in 1999? That's all the clue you're going to get.
Okay.
How about that? All right. Back to the market and the good, bad, and the ugly that has been this week.
Yeah, so there are I mentioned a couple concerning things. The one that stood out to me was subprime delinquencies. They recently hit the highest rate that has ever been recorded. And it's not by much, but it is higher than the previous high. And then recovery rates on that debt are trending towards an all-time low. They're not there yet, but they look like they may go there. And so that's very concerning when stressed buyers are increasing. That is not a good sign for the economy or the consumer. Student loan delinquencies are also trending higher and are now above pre-pandemic levels. This one is a little bit less surprising because delinquency rates went to almost zero under the Biden administration because payments were halted.
Right.
And so
can't pay, no problem.
Well, once you turn those payments back on, it's like a double shock because you were used to them before and then you got used to not having them and now you have to make them again. So I'm not surprised to see that one higher than pre-pandemic levels. That's the problem with some of these programs that they're a shock to the system when they go away. And then those two were the ones that really stood out to me. There's several other mildly concerning things, but I didn't think they were as notable as those two. Everything else that was concerning is really kind of a contrarian indicator. When you see bearish sentiment as low as or as high as it is, that's usually a sign that the market's about to rally. So that one, definitely not concerning. The consumer confidence, consumers get it right a little bit more than investors do. They do get consumer confidence tends to go down during times of recession. And so, that one isn't necessarily a direct contrarian indicator. The one thing they don't do is that consumers don't always realize when it's over. So they'll get really negative, but they'll stay negative for too long. And so they've just gotten negative. So I hope that isn't a recession indicator.
Really?
Those were the things on my mind that really stood out as being negative. But if you look at the historical patterns in the market, when you see times like this where the market drops very quickly into a correction, typically, the market outperforms on a 6 and 12 month basis by a decent margin. Yeah. And so that's encouraging. It's also the fact that the S&P equal weight has held up so much better. The breadth of the market is better than the weighted indices. That's a good sign. That means that there's the mega cap stocks are really having an outsized effect on the market. So outsized, in fact, that they're down an average of almost 25% from their 52-week high right now, and they have accounted for 96% of the drop of the S&P 500. So when you look at that, I guess NVIDIA giveth and taketh away.
Yeah, because no kidding.
A lot of people made a lot of money on it, but right now it's dragging down everyone's portfolio. So that gives me a little more hope too that the other stocks in the market are doing better than they are, and that's a decent sign that there is interest in the market outside of just those seven stocks.
Yeah. Meanwhile, China's market is doing well. The European market is doing well.
Well, China's market, I wouldn't say their market is doing well.
Yeah.
Their economy is
tank. Yes,
that is because of government intervention that their market is doing well. But their economy is not doing well at all.
No, and in fact, if you look at the difference in where their economy is and where ours has come, they couldn't be more different.
Mm-hmm.
Because ours, during the Biden administration, our economy was thriving to the extent that it did thrive on a lot of government spending.
Yeah.
Now that's going away, and what's happening now is investment in things like factories, construction, so on and so forth. The jobs that are being created are paying better. The companies that are coming here are going to pay less and less in taxes, and any pressure on wages will be offset by productivity, shipping costs, that kind of thing. So I think the golden age of manufacturing is right around the corner here, and that will change everything that we all think, do, and say for a while.
And just to back that up, new orders for durable goods rose 0.9% in February. The estimate was down 1%, so it was positive 0.9, and it's positive 1.1 if you include revisions to prior months. So orders are up 3.4% from a year ago. There's definitely something happening in the manufacturing side of things.
And it's about time, because it was about 18 months to 24 months when it was headed down.
Pretty bad.
Month after month.
So I do think that's encouraging as well.
Yeah, another thing, on Friday, it was Friday morning, the Federal Reserve's favorite inflation gauge, the PCE, Personal Consumption Expenditures, matched overall. It was expected at 2.5%. It stayed there. But on the core, it takes out energy and food because they're volatile. It was higher. It was 2.8, and they expected 2.7. Now, those things sound minuscule, but to the market that is just scared to death, Chicken Little responds nowadays to any inflationary instrument or data or anything out there. But what they missed totally, and Adam first brought this to the attention of our listeners and me 3 weeks ago, maybe, a website called Trueflation.
Mm-hmm. I just pulled it up. 1.75%. Yeah. And honestly, I think the government data is overestimating inflation right now. I don't know why, but I think that inflation is actually lower than what they are reporting.
I think it's lower than their target, actually.
It might be.
One thing I noticed that really stuck out in that was the incremental rental costs.
Mm-hmm.
Those were so stubborn so long. And as we've said, they always lag because you sign a lease for a year or whatever. But the new rentals that are coming out now, they're inflating at such a small rate that they're hardly going to have an impact on future inflation. So if people would spend a little more time being thorough in their research. But the problem is the mainstream media doesn't want to do that. Well, they're not going to look for good news while Trump's in office.
If you look at the consumer confidence report too, it's by political party. Mm-hmm. Democrats think that inflation is going to be off the charts.
Yep.
And independents are right in the middle, probably skewing a little more towards inflation at this point. And Republicans think there won't be any inflation. So it's
and as we have been pointing out, they're all wrong.
Yeah, well, I think the independents are probably closest to correct.
They're by far the closest. They're not letting their personal feelings interfere. So I think the chances of this year shaping up real soon, probably pretty good.
Yeah, I would hope to be out of this mess sooner rather than later. Honestly, I think just some clearer picture of what the tariff situation is going to be going forward would go a long way towards clearing this mess up.
Yeah, I'm going to do a little bit more about the whole concept of tariffs here after the break, but I want everybody to understand a major concept in international economics called the VAT tax. Probably all heard the term, but I don't know how many people know. It's called value-added tax, and it is prevalent around the world in that almost everybody but us has one.
Mm-hmm.
It's a liberal-leaning taxation method, and it's completely and totally against free trade.
It is.
The way it happens, at every level of production or buildup of anything that they're about to export, there is a tax added, even if they're going to use it internally. But every level. So if you buy tires and you're a car manufacturer and you're going to put them on your car, then that's taxed, and it adds into the price of the car. So imagine how many components are brought in from here, there, and everywhere, and how much tax is accumulated. By the time something is up for sale, the countries run generally between about 13 and 29% VAT tax. Now, here's the kicker. If they sell that product, let's use a number like 15% VAT tax buildup in it. If they sell that to the U.S., we, the consumers in the U.S., have to pay 15% to reimburse the government of wherever it came from for their VAT tax. But if they sell it to one of their own internal citizens, they rebate the VAT tax to their consumer, their domestic consumer.
Mm-hmm.
So a guy in Germany buying a BMW can pay the non-VAT tax, whereas that same BMW gets shipped over here and it costs us 15 or whatever percent more. And that is the introduction to what is the tariff and why do we have them and why are they so stupid?
And VAT, the other thing about VAT taxes is they're very popular with liberals because they say that consumers don't pay them.
Exactly.
Businesses pay them.
Yeah.
But then why do you think the car costs 15% more? You're paying that tax? That doesn't even make sense.
That is not.
Of course you're paying that tax.
That is not the only reason that you shouldn't have a VAT tax. Can you imagine the complexity, the accounting nightmare?
Oh, it is an accounting nightmare for sure.
Not to mention, It's just stupid. You know, that's an economic term, stupid. And it applies to every country that has it. And who's one of the biggest offenders of all? Don't look too far north to figure it out.
Oh, yeah.
Canada is just, and that you probably all saw the new guy that they elected in Canada. Some Canadians elected him. More about that very shortly. But first, we'll pay some bills and come back. Lots more to talk about, and the lines are open. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
We do have a phone caller, and I just want to remind everybody first that lines are open, 904-222-8255. And Mike is going to take a shot at our trivia question, which today is, what significant market event occurred on this date in 1999? Well, let's see what he knows. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning to the Van Wees. Good morning.
How was everybody?
I'm hanging in there. I just parry once a week with the HOA over weeds.
But better than over weed.
Making some headway, so that's how eventful my life is at the moment.
I hear you.
Anyhow, I want to hear, because I've been listening to so many people talk about what they think April 2nd with the ramification of tariffs are going to be. So I hope you'll talk a little bit more about that if you get to it.
We shall get to it.
Okay, and I'll take a shot at the trivia.
All right.
I believe in 1999, all three major indexes reached record highs at that point. And if that's not enough, I also believe that there were records in how many shares exchanged both on the NASDAQ and in the stock market.
Any chance you could take it one step further?
Yeah, because those things are all true.
Yeah,
but right. We're looking for one specific data point.
A data point.
Yeah. And it, you'll know when we say it, you'll say, okay.
A V8.
So if not the exchanging of the shares that reach records or the indexes. This is usually I say, give me a hint, but I know hints aren't really allowed. I would say that trading volume was the second lightest in 1999.
No.
I'm going to have to say you didn't get it, but
okay.
But you're right on track, and don't listen to the rest of the show because you'll love it. As Adam said, you'll understand immediately what we're talking about.
Yeah.
All right. Love you guys. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. We appreciate you. It's pretty good.
Yeah. It really is. When you hear it, you'll be like, I didn't guess it either. And
bang.
Afterwards, I was like, I guess I could have probably looked that
up. All right. Well, let's talk about Tuesday. Tariff Tuesday.
Yeah. That's what's coming up. It's April 1st. I thought it was the 2nd. That's Wednesday, right?
Yeah. Trump didn't like the connotation of doing it on April 1, and I don't blame him.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah, I'm getting a big dental thing done on the 1st, and I'm still reticent to go in there. Hey, just kidding. The VAT tax. It's what we buy, what we import, we pay the VAT tax to the country of its origin. We sell to them, we don't charge them a VAT tax. So their stuff is expensive relative to our stuff. And who does that punish? Us. Well, America First is pretty much incompatible with we bite the bullet against all of our trading partners. The tariff, the proposed tariff, is nothing more, nothing less than an offset to VAT. So if you don't want the tariff to go on, then it's real easy. Take your VAT off of what you sell us, and it all goes away, and everybody's better off, but especially us. Now, if that doesn't help to explain tariffs, then I am incapable of doing so, because it's not for any other reason but trying to get Americans a better deal overall, which if you think about it, will be anti-inflationary.
Mm-hmm.
look at all the stuff in the stores that comes from somewhere else. Take away all the VAT tax, your costs actually go down.
Yeah, and that's true for lower priced goods as well as luxury brands. You think about like BMW is a good one, Range Rover, and then there's countless lower priced brands where
everything
at Walmart
as well. You know, not everything, but a great deal of Walmart inventory sold every year is imported, and the VAT taxes are applying to those things. So we are slapping an additional tariff on China. And Walmart is telling China, we don't want to pay it, just like that. So there's going to be some discussions going on.
Mm-hmm.
But the real problem in the short run, to me, is not China. It is Canada. Now, we all have been following the lunacy. Now, how could Canada live through a Trudeau and be so forgetful that they hire another Trudeau later? He was an abject disaster, and they've gotten rid of a couple of good ones in between, but they brought in Trudeau, and he quickly became the pariah that his father was. And so he's out. But under the Canadian system, when the prime minister resigns, the people who can vote for the replacement are only the people in that party. So 150,000 liberals chose a liberal to replace the liberal who resigned.
Well, you knew that was the outcome of that.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt. Now, here's the good news. The regular election was scheduled for October. But liberal number two, Trudeau Light, Carver or something like that, he has declared that he is so popular, he's going to move up the elections. So under that parliamentary system, like England, anybody can call for an election, a special election, anytime. And he thinks he's going to then get a majority or at least a plurality of all the voters in Canada. And I don't think so. One of us will be right. One of us will be wrong. We'll know that before long. But that's happening in late April. And he may be ousted by the public then. He has recently declared war on the U.S. within probably 24, certainly within 48 hours, Trump got him on the phone and had what Trump refers to as a productive conversation, which I'm pretty sure was like a spanking over in the corner, but I'm not real sure.
Well, let me put it this way. Canada is a country of 40 million people.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. is a country of 340 million people.
Mm-hmm.
Which one needs access to the other's market to sell into more than the other one? Do we need to sell to 40 million people? It's nice, but we don't need it.
Don't need it.
But on the other hand, 340 million people as your next door neighbor is a huge market that you absolutely cannot lose access to sell into.
And if we want to sell them dairy products, is it fair for us to pay a 290% tariff?
No, of course not.
So what Trump is doing here in his really superior negotiating team, they're trying to make free trade, fair trade. And I have admitted on air, and I will admit to the day I die, that I misunderstood the necessity of having the two of them in order to have a good system. I thought the whole concept of free trade was ample, but I didn't understand things like the VAT tax and all of that. I understood I didn't like it, but I didn't have a thorough understanding of why I didn't like it and how dangerous it was. If we can get this straightened out, every country that plays ball with us reduces our cost of living and helps their own. How many of them are smart enough to recognize that? We'll let you know, I guess, as free trade agreements are signed. Even when they redid NAFTA into the USMCA, it was a sort of a trial rewrite. There were holes left in it, and we're trying to patch those holes. But we're not going to do it in the absence of cooperation between Mexico and Canada, and that comes ahead of everybody else. Although we do have a big propensity for foreign cars, which can be built most anywhere. But you know, I haven't looked this up for about 10 years, but I remember about 10 years ago, I came across a statistic that I thought was very interesting. How many U.S. auto workers are there who work for foreign car companies 10 years ago?
Don't know.
There were 385,000.
Wow.
And think of the plants that have been built since then.
Quite a few, yeah.
Think of the plants that are being refurbished, reopened, built new right now. The whole concept of this tariff situation and the carrot of that, the big carrot, that's the stick. The carrot is a 15% corporate tax rate if you build it here. Now, that hasn't gotten through. And this being as close as it is to April, there's a lot of tax questions sitting out there. And I'm not sure how they're all going to be how they're going to get solved. But I think you're going to see some fairly significant changes if we can keep the lunatics in line. And I'm not talking about Democrats when I say that. There are a few lunatics in the Senate, especially, who don't have a real good grasp on economics and such. But I think they're, so far, if it's mea culpa day, which I promise you will not last into the fourth segment, I think John Thune is actually doing a pretty good job.
So far, so good.
And I was not a fan, to say the least. So I think we're in pretty good shape as we're going into the negotiations. And if this whole thing works out sometime by summer or so, as we start to see the results, especially in the construction industry, and as manufacturing lines do get moved over one by one into this country, I think you're going to see some real solid impacts on inflation reduction, consumer confidence, and so on. And you can think whatever you want to about the market, but I fail to see much of a scenario where if all this happens, the market won't be riding high again pretty soon. I'm not going to bet against it at this point.
Nope, definitely not.
Keep your eyes and ears open, follow the news, but don't bet against the probable success of
the
market.
You also have the Fed sitting on the sidelines waiting to drop rates probably twice this year.
Yeah, and I would bet you anything that the naysayers are wrong and that they're going to do that. And I base that quite a bit on the website Trueflation. They know about that. You can count on that.
For sure.
So I think it's going to be an interesting next few weeks. That's pretty good. One more segment to go. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
Remind everybody, lines are open, 904-222-8255. And the trivia question is out there. What significant market event happened on this day in 1999? And we know it was a good day. That's about all I'll say. I've got one quick thing that I just got a kick out of this morning. Then Adam's got a couple of things he wants to delve into. In 1995, Amazon made its first sale. Do you know what it was?
I don't.
It's a book. Okay. Remember they started out being bookseller.
That's right.
The name of it was Fluid Concepts and Creative Analogies, a book about artificial intelligence.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I couldn't stop laughing when I read that this morning.
That's funny.
This guy was a futurist type, and he didn't know it then.
Yeah.
How about that?
Pretty amazing.
Yeah, I got a kick out of that. All right, what's on your mind here?
Well, I know I've talked about colleges a lot lately, and mm-hmm. part of that is just that I've been, you know, preparing my son to apply to them. But I saw a website this week released a ranking of the top public universities in America, and Florida was very heavily involved in this, okay, to the tune of 2 in the top 10. So coming in at number 5 was the University of Florida, but closely following that at number 10 was Florida State, huh, in the country.
Wow.
Yeah, but it gets better. USF came in at number 20, and UCF came in at number 23.
Wow.
And FIU came in at number 27. And then FAU popped up at number 108. And there were a few more in the top 100, but they were lesser known schools, so mm-hmm. I didn't bring them up. But that's pretty incredible to have 4 in the top 25.
Yeah, Adam and I were talking about the school system in Florida for a different reason. Governor DeSantis has a proposal out there that would eliminate property taxes. And it scares both of us a bit that this could be done incorrectly. We would both like to see them lowered. I think they're absolutely ridiculous. If you're not part of Save Our Homes and have been that way for a long time, it's just ridiculous. But that's not really the bulk of the problem. It's the percentage of the money that we all pay that goes into schools is just gigantic. And we have seen over not too many years, Florida's ranking among in the educational rankings across the country going up and up and up and up. And that's a wonderful thing. And I personally am very happy to see the Department of Education being replaced by more of a block grant system. And I think one of the things that's really helped in Florida is the school choice thing. And it's become a reality, basically. And we were complimenting Duval County on their school system. When we came down here, you would do anything, anything in your power to not live in Duval County, because otherwise you had to really send your kids to a private school if you were real concerned about them. And now you look at the schools in Jacksonville, and they're just fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, not all of them, obviously, but there are
a lot of
good choices.
But you get to choose a good one.
Yeah, we've gone public the whole way, and we've been really, really happy with our experience.
And we moved to St. Johns County back in 92 and went public the whole way, and we're very happy with them.
Yeah.
So but it needed to be done all over the place.
Definitely. I think it has been a success story. And I mean, to me, you look at a state like California, the LA County in particular, they spend more per kid to get them to graduate than any other place in the country. And they have one of the worst graduation rates in the entire country. So it's
highest percentage of graduates who can't read their diploma.
Yeah. If they graduate, which is rare. Mm-hmm. But just throwing money at a problem is not a solution to a problem. You have to overhaul and come up with some new ideas. Anyways, I read the dumbest article of the week this week. And
you take some time to call them out these days.
It really does. But this one was particularly bad, and it targets Florida. It says that the headline is, five towns face near certain real estate crash this year. Three in Florida, two are in unexpected state. And this just screams political motivation. Everyone is rooting for Florida to lose residents this year. And it's just ridiculous. But it goes on to list Winter Haven, Tampa, and West Palm Beach among the top five U.S. markets most likely to see home price declines in 2025. Now, wait a second. The headline said a crash. This says home price declines. That's a big difference between a crash and a decline. But these are the stats that they pulled out to justify this. Winter Haven saw a spike in the buyers in the pandemic, but there was a 1.2% drop in home sales from October of 2024 to 2025. And West Palm Beach saw a 1.2% dip in sales between October and January. That's
crash.
That was one of their key metrics of why those are going to crash this year.
Huh.
Yeah.
Actually, when I think about it, those are two of the nicest places to live in all of Florida.
Well, I'll be honest. I was just in West Palm Beach in just this past week, and it did not seem like an area in economic decline. In fact, from when I lived there 25 years ago until now, it has boomed. I mean, absolutely boomed. There have been, I read an article in the Wall Street Journal the other day, 300 financial firms have moved into West Palm Beach in the last 5 years.
Oh.
I have a hard time believing that this is the area where the market is going to crash.
Including the guy who was formerly Chicago's wealthiest citizen.
Mm-hmm. And that's just one of many, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the place is, it's a beautiful part of Florida, and we really enjoyed being back down there.
Good.
And I just don't, there's nothing in this article to me that screams anything about matching up with the title. And that just really bothers me. I can't stand when they write articles like that.
Yeah, well, how about I'll do the second dumbest article of the week.
Okay.
Are you familiar with ThinkAdvisor?
Yeah.
Okay. They're the hardest people to figure out. I sometimes think they're brilliant and think the way I do, and sometimes I think these people are nuts. So it's either that they're good or they're bad or whatever. I don't know. But this is from ThinkAdvisor. John Manganaro is the journalist on it. And I read pretty much everything he does. And a lot of it's, I consider myself a fan of his writing. But this one says tax revenue on track to fall $500 billion in 2025 report. And it starts out, government officials at the IRS and Treasury are bracing for a significant drop in tax revenues this year, according to a report published by, you ready?
Yep.
The Washington Post.
Okay.
The paper cites, here we go, three unnamed officials in warning that tax receipts could fall by as much as 10% or $500 billion if current trends hold through the end of the tax season.
No way.
This directly linked to shifting taxpayer behavior and President Donald Trump's cuts at the IRS. Who's feather and who's bed around here?
There's no way that tax receipts dropped 10% this year.
And then he goes on to say that he doesn't see an increase in tax cheating. Hello? Anybody home? I'm not sure. Democrats and independents have argued that cutting the IRS staff would mean significantly less help and longer waits for taxpayers and increase the risk that tax cheats escape paying what they owe.
Okay.
But so then he goes on and says that won't happen.
Independents are not arguing that. No. Democrats might be arguing that.
Yes. But
there's no way that independents are arguing that.
So, living in the journalistically oriented world that we live in, here's a response on, get this, ThinkAdvisor. 500 in lost tax revenue? Question mark. Unlikely, the Cato Institute says. And Cato is a very well-known think tank, but they sure as heck aren't conservative. So this guy took, looks like about twice as many words to refute that stupid report as the other guy did. You're watching people in D.C. very, very afraid that a lot of their friends are being cut from the payroll.
Well, the Washington Post is not exactly an impartial source either.
Jeff Bezos had a talk with, for those who don't know, he also owns the Washington Post. He had a chat with Trump the other day after he changed his editorial policy that they're going to honor free markets, that kind of thing.
Which caused several employees to resign their jobs, which is insane.
And he confided to Trump that the staff of the Washington Post was out of control. How lefto wacko they are. Mm-hmm. They're incapable of doing the news anymore. So he's going to have some fun over there now, I think. And by fun, I put quotes on it because I would hate to walk into that hornet's nest with being a guy like him and have them all down his throat, basically. Very strange. Well, on March 29th of 1999, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed above 10,000 for the very first time in history. See how close you were, Mike? And all the surrounding pretty details close. Just right. But the detail that I was most caught by, that was a milestone.
Yeah, for
that
sure.
That was a big. So that's what happened back then. And despite all the turmoil of the last several sessions and last few weeks, it's still well over 41,000. This is what happens over time. It's only 26 years ago, and we put on another 31,000 points, and it's probably, I'm not going to be much older than I am now when it hits 50,000. I'm pretty sure of that.
Yeah.
Well, that went fast, so thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next week, same time. Don't miss it. This is the Ben Weepin.